You can talk now. Go on. So that I can... I think you're fine.
Good.
Oh, dear.
The CMU Podcast, in association with 7 Digital.
This week, South by Southwest, Pandora and Deadmau5. It's the CMU Podcast, looking back at the last week in the music business. I'm Andy Malt. With me, it's Chris Cook. Hello, Chris Cook.
Matt makes very good cappuccinos. I just think I should go on record. Here at the studio, it's a little coffee-making machine, and I'm enjoying this cappuccino. Because I had lunch at the hotel next to the studio. Backstory, used to be the offices where CMU was based. So the offices...
It wasn't a hotel then.
It wasn't a hotel then.
We didn't rent out a hotel room to work.
Although it would have been a lot preferable, because we were basically based there when it was falling down, waiting to be turned into a hotel, because that's the sort of rock and roll... Well, it's kind of rock and roll, working in a building that could collapse around you at any moment.
Hey, Milo Yiannopoulos, or however you pronounce his name, used to be on the floor downstairs.
He did!
You know, they had the best in there.
There was our opportunity, given how dodgy that lift was. We could have got rid of him there and then. I think I've gone on a tangent quite quickly. I can't even remember how...
You got on a number of tangents quite quickly.
Can't even remember how we got into this tangent. Oh, yes. I was in the Royal London House Hotel that used to be a falling down building where CMU was based. It's no longer a falling down building where CMU is based. It's now a almost plush hotel. And I went in there for some lunch because it's right next to the studio. Well, not right next to, but very near the studio. So I was there. And they do a nice little steak and chips. It's not big. It's not a big portion, but I like it. It's nice. It's not that well priced, but I mean, it's not extortionately priced. But I had a coffee there last week and the coffee's not great. So I decided not to have a coffee after my lunch. And I thought, no, I'll wait till I get to the studio because Matt has really cracked the coffee machine in the studio, and the cappuccino that he will make for me will be vastly superior to anything that I would get at the Royal London House bar. Although it's brilliant, you should all go there for lunch, because everything but the coffees is brilliant if they want to give me a free lunch in return for the plug.
I got a free drink there last week.
You did, that was because they screwed up the
order. The service was so bad. After your big plug for them.
A certain other member of the CMU team went there recently, I don't know if it was for a meeting or something, and asked for a flat white.
Yeah.
They didn't know what a flat white was, which you'd think a hotel in Shoreditch would have got there.
Really, they're going to have to learn that fast.
Would have got there. So apparently, first go, they bought him a coffee in a glass, and then they brought him a massive cappuccino, and then finally they brought him something that potentially was a flat white. But he's written to complain, so they know all of this.
Well,
because this particular member of the CMU team is prone to put his complaints into writing.
Anyway, we're not sponsored by this hotel, but that's the sort of great bigging up you could receive if you want to sponsor this podcast. So do get your applications in now.
The steak and chips is great. It's just the coffee's on.
Everything else.
The coffee's are rubbish and the service isn't brilliant, but they do a nice little being the key word. Because they're sort of pretending it's, what's that thing where you have lots and you share? It's got a word. What's the Spanish word?
Tapas.
It's a sort of tapas type place. So they're all little helpings. But the steak and chips is fine for a lunch. Just don't go there in a rush. And you don't get a coffee. What you do is when you're finished, you walk out of the Royal London House onto Finsbury Square, round the corner into the 7 Digital building, and on the third floor, Matt will make you a coffee, which will be vastly superior to anything. And I'm sure...
He's fine, he's nodding, he's fine with this.
Very competitively priced, I'm sure.
Form an orderly queue.
Form an orderly queue, yeah.
So, anyway, he made me a peppermint tea. I'm sure he'd do that as well.
I went so soon...
This is really not... I introduce this as the last week in the music business. And all right, we're in the music business and we did.
Did you
this.
Even get that far in your intro?
Yeah, no, I did.
I can't even remember what you said at the start. I went on my tangent quite quickly.
It was clearly you couldn't keep it in.
Well, I was sort of, it occurred to me that people might be able to hear me slurping the coffee. And so I was just covering. If there's any slurping going on in the background, it's because...
That was worthwhile bulldozing the first 5 minutes of the podcast.
It's because I'm drinking this excellent coffee that has been made for me. So, yeah, that is that enough for an intro?
Yeah, that'll do.
Or do you want to say something else before we leap into dissecting the most fascinating stories that have been happening this week in the industry of music?
No, let's just move on.
Let's just move on.
Forget that ever happened.
Okay.
Coming up this week
yeah.
on the CMU podcast, looking back at the last week in music business.
I'm Chris Cook. I don't think you did that bit.
We did all of
that. Did you do that bit?
Yeah. I did all of it.
Did you?
You were just too busy thinking about
I was drinking coffee. My coffee, not thinking about it.
Well, both really. Anyway, this week, Pandora's new premium service, Deadmau5's legal battle over the name of his cat, Music Business News. But first, let's talk about the South by Southwest Festival, which is currently ongoing and will be until the end of this weekend.
It's confusing, South By these days, isn't it? They're all different bits. So obviously music is the original bit, but they still have a film festival, I assume.
Yeah.
Actually, the media tech bit, which I think comes first. I might be wrong. It might be that it's all happening next week. I probably should have looked at their website before we started this. I was too busy drinking my coffee.
The 10th to the 19th. South by Southwest runs.
But the tech bit, which I think comes first, so I think therefore has happened, unless I'm getting this wrong. It must be if it finishes on the 19th.
Yeah, I got one press release about it this year.
The tech bit used to get so much press. In fact, there was a few years where, if you didn't really know what South by Southwest was, from the UK media's coverage of it, you'd be thinking it was just a tech event.
Well, there was a point, there was one year when a lot of music journalists went to the tech bit rather than the music bit. Because that was a weird year.
Where all the interesting stuff was happening. But I didn't hear anything about the tech side this year. I assume it still happened.
Well, I haven't heard anything much about anything that's happened at South
By. Actually,
this year. All I've heard about is people not getting into it.
I know, but if you think about it, this immigration visa malarkey we're about to go through in painful detail has put the music element of South By back in the news.
It really
has. Because it is what people have been talking about this year, about all the artists who can't get there. But that's reminding people that at its heart, South by Southwest is a music festival where lots of bands who are trying to launch themselves into the American market from around the world go and play, if only the bloody US board. When they're checking, not only am I not going to get any freebies at Royal London House, if we lay into the US border officials too much on this podcast, you might find yourself at the American border and they'll go back through the podcasts and then it might not let us in.
I have no plans to go to the US at the moment.
So let's just say that the US border officials have all been brilliant. They've all been top notch.
Yes, and if you work on the US border, this is the end of the podcast. Goodbye.
Yes. So South By is ongoing as we speak. We're not there. Because we're here.
Yeah.
We're only not there because we had to do this podcast.
Otherwise, we totally would have gone.
As you know, I always prioritise the podcast, and that is why in 2 weeks' time there won't be a podcast because I'll be at Tallinn Music Week. But I'm thinking of putting the Output podcast.
Yeah, you can do that.
The longer-awaited and much-anticipated Output podcast that somebody asked me about last week, who was at Output. And who thought it was, because they'd not listened to, you know, was it last week's podcast, the week before, whichever podcast it was where we gave the backstory about the fact that I still haven't got the Output podcast online.
Yeah.
They hadn't heard that one yet. And they were like, did you ever put that Output podcast out? And I was like, oh, I sort of sheepishly said no, I never quite got around to it. But he was blaming the iTunes podcast feed. He thought there was something wrong with his podcast app.
Ah.
So that's what we should That's what we should have gone with. That should have been the excuse.
We put it up, it just disappeared.
But, so there's going to be a week where there'll be no proper podcast, but that's when we'll put out the Output podcast, for definite.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. And it's sounding really good.
Yeah.
But, but with the exception of Tallinn Music Week, I always prioritise the podcast, and that is why we're not at South by Southwest, because we needed to be here to talk about the week in music.
We're on a fairly tight deadline this
week. We are.
But we've stopped going on tangents.
With the exception of, I'm only interested. I've only come here today to talk about Deadmau5's cat. All the other stories I couldn't care less
about. To be fair, yeah, me too.
So
I know, but the quicker we get through this rubbish, we can devote half an hour to
that. All right then, go on then. Tell us about all the visas
crap. Some bands couldn't get in. We talked last week about how this New York band Told Slant boycotted the festival because of a couple of bits of wording in the contract that basically said, if you're an international band and you come over here and you play unofficial showcases, not part of the official South by Southwest program.
Yes, all the little fringy events that happen in Austin.
Then you risk being deported. And they thought, oh, that's terrible saying that.
Yeah,
that's this traumatization of the world.
This was a New York band who weren't in any way affected by that. But given the context of all of the debate around immigration and Donald Trump's crazy travel ban that's never quite happened for various technical legal reasons, but because immigration is such a big talking point, both in the US but also in lots of other places at the moment, those clauses in the South By contract, which were not new, they've been there for years, were reread in the context of the immigration debate. And the, you can make your own decision whether or not it was what South By were implying in the contracts or it was what other people were inferring in the way it was worded in the contracts. Yes. But it sort of sounded like South By were saying, if you play unofficial events, because we hate those unofficial events, we'll shop you to immigration and you'll be chucked out of the country and you'll never come back. Whereas what South By was saying was, we just want to make people aware that if they're over here on certain visas, then those visas apply to their official South By sets, but not to the unofficial South By sets, and they might contravene their visa if they go off and play these fringe events, and they need to be aware of that because it could cause trouble with immigration.
As we have discovered this week.
Well, this week it turns out that even if you are playing only official South By showcases, there are still plenty of questions around visas. And so, yes, that has been the big development this week.
Yes, so various acts. I mean, this happens every year, but obviously there's been more focus on it, and it's hard to tell if it's happening more than other years this year, or if it's just more people are looking.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two, that you're right, that we've had people tell us in the past that they've had trouble getting to South By, getting into the US to go to South By. They went to the country with the visa they were told by whoever, sometimes by South By, that that was the visa that they required, and they were blocked going in. So this isn't a new thing. This isn't because anything that Donald Trump has changed to immigration law. But certainly there are more stories of it happening, which I think is partly because it's just more newsworthy, because it's locked into that ongoing thing. But, and I know one lawyer, immigration law expert, had actually said in an article pre-South By, when this was happening to other musicians elsewhere, that it is likely that post-Trump's sort of tightening of immigration, border officials across America, whether you're flying in or driving in, although the Canadian border seems to be where there were particular problems, but if you're coming in, the border officials are just being much more rigorous, they're scrutinising things, and so bands that's in the past would never even have to have shown their visas, because they just would have been waved through, are now being asked lots of questions, and so it possibly is that, even though the rules haven't changed, more artists are being caught up in what are ambiguities about what you can and can't do on different visas when you go and play music in America.
Yes, so the problem is that bands, as they always have done, are coming in from outside the US on either a B1 tourist visa, or if they're in one of the 40 countries with which the US has a visa waiver agreement, they're coming on the ESTA visa waiver program.
Which includes the UK.
Which does include the UK. And so those bands would expect, because they're only playing a showcase, they're not earning money, they're just going to play South By and go away. And it's basically they're treating it as a trade fair, which would allow you to come and go.
Yeah, so I suppose on that visitor visa that you mentioned, there's B1 and B2. I can never quite remember which one is which. But the point is, on that visa, you can go to the US to do business,
yes,
but you can't go to the US to earn money.
Correct.
So I could go and have meetings in New York, and that would be fine, and I could do that. Actually, as a UK citizen, I could do that on the ESTA, so I wouldn't even need a visa at all. I'd just have to pay the bloody American government $10 to get my ESTA. But it's a really simple process. You just fill out a quick form. However, if I was to go to New York and then actually do some work that I was paid for, can't do that on that visa. And I suppose that the musical equivalent of that is if you're actually going to perform for cash. But the argument is, with South By, artists don't get paid to play. It is a trade fair. And even though South By are selling tickets, the bands are not there to earn money. They're there to promote themselves. And so, well, this is where it's all a grey area, isn't it? A lot of people argue that that is fine on either the visitor visa or on the ESTA. And lots of artists are saying, both artists who are there this year, artists who have been there before, including some of the artists who didn't get entry this year, are saying, in the past, most international artists have rocked up to South By with their visitor visa or their ESTA, and it's been fine, no questions asked. But suddenly there are issues.
Yes, and so you have a range of different problems. One of them, I mean, the most covered in the media this week was an Italian band called Soviet Soviet. I would suggest that naming your band Soviet twice is automatically likely to get you scrutinised at the US border. But they were going in, they were playing South by Southwest, but they also had other shows booked in. Now, those were shows that they weren't being paid for, but when the Border Patrol looked them up on Google, they found that some of the shows had entry prices charged, and so they were like, no, that's seems a lot like work, even if you're not being paid for it, and send them away.
But more than that, because
well, detain them overnight, handcuffed them and stuck them in jail.
I mean, that was because by the time they'd gone through the bureaucratic process and the border guard people had worked out that they weren't going to let them in, there then wasn't a flight back, I assume, back to Italy. But anyway, they couldn't get them back out of the country, and so they said, well, we can't let them in the country because they're not allowed in, but we can't send them home because there's no more flights. So obviously, we handcuff them, stick them in a police car, take them to the nearest police station and lock them up in a cell for a night before taking them back to the airport to fly them home. Which, well, I think it's fair to say. I mean, that's protocol. The The relevant agency said, that's just the way we do it. You know, we're very polite. It's not that we're heavy-handed, but that is just our policy. I don't know from a UK perspective. I don't know what would happen, the equivalent here. It does seem a little bit over the top to actually take you to the nearest police station and lock you up in the cell for a night because of a bureaucratic error. But whatever. That's different cultures.
But so that was more in keeping with the language that had come up in this South by Southwest contract. However, a number of the bands who've been turned away are just turning up to play South by and then go home and are not being let through the border.
Yeah, you're right. So there is two different things happening here. There are some artists who are coming in to play South By and some other promotional unpaid events, but that is the grey area that South By were raising in their contracts. Because of the little sort of hoo-ha following that New York band criticising that, South By had said, oh, we're going to take that out of our contract next year, although it's sort of looking like it really needs to stay.
or be rewritten to be...
But at least the warning needs to be there that if you're coming over here on a visitor's visa, even if it, as South By are arguing, that is fine for South By, it probably isn't fine for other events. You need to be very careful about that. So that is what is affecting some artists. But as you say, there are some artists who, as far as South By are concerned, are obeying the rules in that they're only coming to play official South By events. They've got the letter from South By with their visa and their passport saying this is a promotional event, they're not being paid. And there has been confusion at the border as whether simply playing an official South By showcase where you are not paid, can that be done on this visitor visa or on an ESTA? And there are some border officials who are saying no.
Yeah, and the US Customs and Border Protection Agency have put out a statement earlier this week saying that if you're coming over to the US to perform, regardless of whether you're being paid or not, you have to get a P1 performance visa. That's it. That's the rules. However, South by Southwest is contending that. They actually said that that statement is just sort of a stock statement. It doesn't properly relate to this situation. They've hired a new immigration lawyer.
It's interesting because when these stories first started circulating, they were a little bit vague, South By. They were saying we were aware of these issues, we're trying to sort things out, but they weren't specifically going on the record as saying anything. And certainly their own guidance in the past, as far as we can see, has always had a bit of a get out in that they generally say to artists, you should be able to play on a visitor's visa, but entry is not always guaranteed. Whereas actually, since this has escalated and become a big story and they've brought in this immigration lawyer to sort of look into it and to represent the festival to the authorities, they're now being much more adamant that if you are simply coming to play an official showcase, that should be fine on a visitor's visa.
Yes, so this new lawyer, Jonathan Ginsberg, put out a statement in which he said, US immigration law allows foreign nationals to enter the US using a B visa or the visa waiver program to conduct business, but not to render services. The US Department of State accordingly has long recognised that the entertainment groups may enter the US to showcase, but not to perform under contract with US venues or other employers. Therefore, he's arguing that these visas are fine
for South By official showcases.
And they should not be turning acts away. And so they're now working to have that fully confirmed and all border officials
briefed
and brought up to speed on what the rules are. Like we say, this is nothing new, but it tends not to be... I mean, it's never been such a big deal in the media as it has been this year. And South by Southwest doesn't want that to be the story that dominates their event every year.
Even if it has put the music side back into the news pages. But yes, and I suppose that statement that the, what do they call, Customs and Borders something thing put out.
Customs and Border Protection.
Which they supplied to Billboard when they were asked about this. And I suppose actually there's enough sort of waffle in that statement that you could, because they aren't explicitly saying to play South by you need a performance visa. So there is enough wiggle room in what they said, that both what they are saying and what South By are saying with regards official showcases at South By, ignoring fringe events and other gigs, that they're not necessarily in dispute. But the thing that is clear is that nothing's clear.
and what
is needed is specifically for official showcases at South By, can we just have some clarity that can go to all the border officials? I mean, it's sort of too late for this year. But that for next year could ensure that people who are only playing those official showcases for definite can get in on their visitor's visa or on their ESTA, and it's only if you're doing the extra gigs that then you need to be a little bit more careful. And indeed, there have been some experts who help either their lawyers or their people who do the admin to help artists get visas to go into America, who are admitting that there are ambiguities here, that the system isn't brilliant, but a lot of them are saying we would always advise our artists coming into America, even if they're not being paid for their gigs, that they probably need a performance visa. Official South by showcases may be an exception to that, but the best advice generally is err on the side of caution and spend that little bit of extra money and go through what is a slightly tedious bureaucratic process to get that performance visa. But we'll see. If it does happen again next year, I think there'll be an opportunity here for Mexico to launch a rival showcase festival that happens at the same time.
You call it the Over the Wall Festival.
Yeah, the Over the Wall Festival, and get all the bands who can't get into America to come and play. So that might be a little...
Can you have your deportation deferred? So they don't announce a lineup. It's just any band that can't get into the US.
Yeah, exactly.
Immediately sent to Mexico.
Yeah, they'll have a special airfield set up and everybody can just fly there. And then there can be the, what did you call it? The Beyond the Wall.
The Over the Wall
Festival. The Over the Wall Festival. I think there's something in this. I think we should stop this podcast and go and plan the inaugural Over the Wall Festival in Mexico next March.
Still to come, we got some more news in brief and the Venn diagram where music, cats and lawsuits meet. But now, let's talk about Pandora, which this week has launched its new premium on-demand streaming service.
Finally!
Finally, at last.
Yes.
I've been talking about it for most of my life, it seems like.
So Pandora, I seem to spend most of my life these days telling people just how massive Pandora is in the US. But Pandora, the personalised radio service, and its main competitor in the US, iHeartRadio, which until very recently only offered the personalised radio streaming experience. So it's not like Spotify, it's not fully on demand. You basically go in and you say, I like Deadmau5, and then it will play you a Deadmau5 track, and then it will play you other tracks it thinks you will like because you said you like Deadmau5. And that's how personalised radio works. And Pandora and iHeart are massive in the US. Between them, they have more users than Spotify and Apple do worldwide, just in America. So they're really big services. However, they're generally ad-funded. Pandora have always had a sort of a premium version of personalised radio, which they call Pandora Plus, but not many people have ever signed up to that. So they're predominantly free services paid for by advertising. Neither are making much money, so they need to find other revenue streams in order to go into profit. And so they've both now launched a $10 a month service, which is basically a full-on Spotify competitor. They're quite late to market there, because obviously Spotify's been around for a long time. Apple Music's approaching a couple of years in business now. Although, what they have are these massive free user bases.
Yes.
You know, they've got 80 million each users to their free services, who they can now try and sell their $10 service to. So they do have an audience that they can try and sell it to, even though they're relatively late to market. And I suppose what's been interesting, when iHeart and Pandora have launched their premium service, they've both been keen to do two things, which is first of all to say this isn't just a Spotify ripoff, even though it is basically a Spotify ripoff, but they've both been keen to say, oh, our service is different to Spotify and Apple. So iHeart made a big deal about the fact that obviously iHeart also own a lot of AM and FM radio stations in the US, and they're pulling in programs and stuff like that. And then this week, as Pandora's $10 service finally went live, they also made a big deal about how, oh, our service is different. And the other thing that both of them have said is, okay, yes, we're head-to-head with Spotify and with Apple and increasingly with Amazon. But what we understand is the mainstream consumer.
Yes.
The people who have never been turned on to $10 a month by Spotify and Apple, and we can turn them onto it because our service is more mainstream friendly.
Yes, I guess that is what is interesting about that. And what's interesting, we've discussed obviously a lot on this podcast about how the key to the mainstream consumer is offering different price points, probably lower price points. But obviously, as we've said, this is a $9.99 a month service. It's the same.
Both iHeart and Pandora have a $5 service, but that is simply personalised radio with the ads taken away and a little bit of extra functionality. But the fully on-demand experience, yeah, is the same price point as everyone else.
But what Pandora is saying is that it's cracked playlists for the mainstream consumer, and that's what's going to make a success of them.
You can choose to believe that or not, but there was an interesting blog post by Glenn Peoples, who you may have come across in the past because he is a journalist with Billboard and still writes for Billboard. But he also has a second job, as we all do these days. Do I have a second job? What's your second job? I'm sure we all have some second job somewhere. But he has a second job doing sort of analysis and insight stuff for Pandora. And so he's got a blog on Medium. And they were all, although obviously most of what he writes on that blog, because he's doing it in his Pandora capacity, is bigging up Pandora. But also it's quite an interesting blog to go and read because he is explaining some of the thinking behind what's going on at Pandora. He wrote a very interesting post last year, which we then reported on in quite some detail about how artists are getting paid through Pandora now that they've sort of ramped up and they're doing this premium service and stuff like this. But he talked a lot about research that Pandora had both done and consulted about what the average consumer wants from a paid-for premium streaming service, and then tried to explain how the Pandora app that went live in the US at South By actually this week is fulfilling that aim. And basically, the one-line version of all of this research was that the mainstream consumer likes playlists and likes personalised playlists, but can't be bothered making them.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, yeah. When you ask people what they want from a streaming service, from a premium streaming service, it is playlists, apparently. But actually quite a low, like it's like 40% of people actually create new playlists on a weekly basis. The vast majority of playlists, and this is a, they said this was something they got from Ardio, which obviously Pandora bought in order to build its on-demand service.
Yes, so what was an on-demand streaming service?
What they learned from that was actually most playlists people put up to 5 tracks on them and then get bored and stop making them.
So I suppose here we're talking about your personal library, to use Spotify jargon. So obviously there are the playlists that streaming services create and that other people share, but it's basically your own personal library. People want to have their own personal at the gym playlist and the Saturday night playlist and stuff like that. But whereas sort of the geeky sort of full-on music fans that we know, who were sort of the early adopters to Spotify and maybe subsequently Apple Music, one thing they really enjoy doing is sitting down and saying, okay, I'm doing my film soundtracks playlist, what am I going to put in there, and then going through and finding the tracks. Yeah, what they're saying is the average consumer thinks, oh, film soundtrack playlist, personalised for me, that's brilliant. Okay, we'll have, what would you have? Something from Pulp Fiction, maybe Underworld, Born Slippy. What would you have in your film soundtrack playlist?
I don't know, the Trolls soundtrack is what features heavily in my life at the moment, so I'm not sure I'm the person to ask right
Celine
now.
Celine Dion from Titanic, obviously that's one of your favourites.
Yeah.
A couple of songs from Lion King. Anyway, so you put a few initial tracks into your film soundtrack playlist for your own personal listening, and then you'd be like, yeah, I'm bored of this now. And so what Pandora are saying is, aha, we've come up with a solution here, which is you start your playlist and you put in the 4 or 5 tracks. And then when, according to their research and audio data, you then get bored because you're a mainstream consumer rather than a full-on music fan, you press a button and then they keep putting more and more things onto your playlist.
Yeah, see, this is what, it's interesting. Actually, they talk about, yeah, what people want is suggestions for songs in their playlist. And Spotify's done this for a little while. At the bottom of each playlist, it will tell you, here's our 5 songs that you might want to add. Whereas Pandora, you press a button that says add more songs and it will add 5 more songs to your playlist. Not that you've chosen, that it's decided you will like. And they reckon because of their listener data and their music genome project that Pandora's built on, it will pick 5 tracks that you all want to hear.
Yes, and I suppose what they were admitting, and Glenn admitted this in this article, is this facility, which is combining 2 things, isn't it? So it's picking things that is relevant to the topic that you've picked for your playlist, but then it's picking things that it thinks you will like. So perhaps it wouldn't put Celine Dion from Titanic on your personal playlist. And this will work best for existing Pandora users who have been using the personalised radio service for however many years. And obviously, although the personalised radio service, you don't get to pick music on demand, what you do get to do is skip tracks and do a thumbs up and a thumbs down. So if you've been using the personalised radio Pandora for 5 years and you've been skipping tracks and you've been saying to Pandora, I love that track, I hate that track, it's then going to mash all of that information together so that when you want 5 tracks added to your personal film soundtrack playlist, they're going to be the most perfect tracks in the world, of course, because of all this wonderful data and data crunching that they have been doing. This at least is the theory.
Yes. I mean, of course, recommendation in streaming services is not a new thing, and it's something that streaming services get right and wrong in different ways. Whether Pandora has genuinely found a new way to engage people with its new service remains to be seen, but I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks as and when Pandora releases subscriber numbers.
And obviously Pandora is a publicly listed company, so it tends to reveal slightly more information and data than the privately owned streaming services. Although I suppose actually what would be really interesting, given that even if that adding tracks to your playlist function, whatever they're calling it, works really well, it clearly will work particularly well for existing Pandora subscribers. So it would be interesting to know, once you get the Pandora stats, how many people are of the 80 million existing free users being upsold and then having the benefit of all that Pandora data from the last 5-10 years then pumped into an on-demand experience, and are they signing up any new people? And I guess they've got such a big free user base at the moment in the US that actually it wouldn't really matter if nearly everybody who signs up is coming from the free user base. Also, it means you've got less free people who are almost lost leader customers.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily need to be signing up brand new people. Although we do know that Pandora have global ambitions, so they are already available in Australia and New Zealand, but it's predominantly an American service. If they were to launch over here, they're starting from scratch. And at that point, that sort of, oh, well, we understand what music you like, so our recommendations are better, isn't going to be a sell because they don't have the data on any of the users. So it would be interesting to know what they did down the line. But we talk a lot about which streaming services are going to crack mainstream, are going to bring in those consumers who are just not interested in the Spotify and Apple Music pitch. I think Pandora have a chance, just like Amazon do and iHeart. Whether this will be the thing that clinches it, well, we'll see. But definitely worth reading Glenn's blog to explain the logic behind that thinking.
Yes, we'll include a link to that in the show notes.
Oh, aren't we generous?
For this show, to make life easy for everyone.
Super.
Quickly, time to look through a few more of this week's music business stories in brief. We discussed Ed Sheeran's dominance of the charts last week, but that was before the charts had come out. We said that all 16 tracks on the album were going to be in the top 40. In the end, they were all in the top 20.
Yeah.
He had 80% of the top 20. He had 90% of the top 10, and he had 100% of the top 5.
The midweek suggested he would only have 9 of the top 10, and he did in the end. So that's a bit of a failure, really, isn't it? I mean, losing out that last position in the top 10. But yeah, we discussed last week in a very serious, rigorous way what this was telling us about the music charts and where the music charts should go. Since then, unsurprisingly, I think there have been at last count 4,092 articles about what we should do with the music charts in the light of the
very few of them taking on board our suggestion that the official charts company should just count something else now.
I still think
is the way forward.
The number of baked beans stocked in the average supermarket, I think, was your suggestion.
Was one of them, yeah.
I would just like to throw in that, you know, people always take the charts really seriously, like they take music awards. But it's just a marketing platform. it's nothing serious. It's just a way to try and sell more bloody records in the same way. That's what the Brits are for. It's what the Mercury Prize is for. They're all just marketing platforms. So when deciding what to do, you should just decide what sells more records because that's where the chart exists. That's my contribution to that debate. Let's not talk any more about Ed Sheeran. He clearly doesn't need any more exposure from the CMU podcast.
The government has confirmed that it is going to ban ticket touting bots that hoover up tickets en masse before actual people can buy them, and introduce better enforcement in response to one of the many secondary ticketing reviews.
We talked about the bots ban last year, so there has been a proposal that a specific ban against the software that ticket touts use to buy up tickets as soon as they go on sale from the primary sites, that there should be a specific ban inserted in the Digital Economy Bill that's currently working its way through Parliament. That was proposed in Parliament. Initially, government ministers were saying, well, we think that people shouldn't use this software, but we reckon actually it's already illegal under some other legislation and we should test that. But now they're saying, all right then, we should get a specific ban in the Digital Economy Bill. So there's absolutely no doubt that the ticket tout bots are illegal. And as you say, yes, they have responded to the Waterson Review second ticketing, and they're basically saying, yeah, everything he said we should do. And the main thing in there really is the little bit of second ticketing regulation that went into the Consumer Rights Act in 2015. Is anyone enforcing that? Not really. That's a money, basically. So national trading standards are who Waterson suggested should enforce the laws that are already there. They need some money in order to do that. And so the government, I don't know whether this was written in blood, that they were definitely going to find the money. And I think we know this week that the government's certainly capable of quite big U-turns when necessary. But there was a basic commitment that they're going to find the money so that they can enforce those rules that were added to regulate sector ticketing in the Consumer Rights Act in 2015. But anyway, a more moves forward for the anti-touting campaign in the UK. So if you're anti-touting, I think that's good news.
Yeah. SoundCloud has played down rumours that it's holding a fire sale, as it would.
Not that it's moving into selling gas fires.
No. There are rumours that due to its running out of money and inability to raise new money, it's going to sell for a knockdown price of $250 million.
Which is still quite a lot of money. But it has been valued at one point, well, at $700 million. And actually, I think at one point, some people were going up as high as $800 million, the value of SoundCloud. We've talked at great length. They really need to find a buyer. Spotify was linked to it last year. But, the rumour was that it all fell through because Spotify simply weren't willing to pay the price that SoundCloud's current owners are asking for. The rumour this week was now that if you went in there with $251 million, you'd probably get a favourable hearing, although, as is the case, I mean, I think SoundCloud now presumably have a Word document of responses to all of these stories about SoundCloud's ability to raise new money and find a buyer. So they said, that's all fine. Hey, DJs now can share in the income that we're not generating through subscription sales. So there you go. That was this week's SoundCloud developments.
Eurovision is turning out to be a lot of fun this year, and we're still a couple of months away from it. It's taking place in Ukraine this year, because obviously Ukraine won last year. When Ukraine won last year, Russia immediately said, well, we might boycott that because not big fans of Ukraine. Ukraine also not big fans of Russia. It was the deadline for entries on Monday this week, I think, and Russia still had not put forward an entry.
But at the last minute...
At the last minute on Sunday, they did. And then immediately Ukraine said, we might block your entry from entering Ukraine, or we might let her in and then arrest her.
So, yes.
That would be quite good fun.
So it's not that Ukraine have a problem with the song, whereas last year Russia did have a problem with Ukraine's winning song because they said that it was political and you're not allowed political songs in Eurovision, but it got past the Eurovision rule police. But it's not that Ukraine have a problem with the song, it's that Ukraine currently have a policy that if you go and play a gig in Crimea, which obviously was the region of Ukraine that Russia grabbed back...
And the region of Ukraine that their song last year was about,
then you're then on a blacklist and you can't come in perform in Ukraine itself. And although this singer isn't actually on that blacklist,
she has played in Crimea since the occupation.
She has admitted that that has happened, which is hence why Ukraine are threatening to either not let her in, South by style, or to let her in and arrest her. So, well, I don't know, part of me just feels like that sort of... That could be the sort of the Archduke Ferdinand moment of World War III.
If Eurovision sparks World War III,
wouldn't that be? I mean, it would be horrible, but in 100 years' time, that would be hilarious.
It would make history lessons in 100 years' time a lot more fun.
So we'll see what happens in May when Russia attempt to attend one of the semi-finals of the 2018. No, hang on, we're not in 2018
yet.
The 2017 Eurovision Song Contest.
You can read about all of those stories on our website, links to which will be in the show notes for this show. If you go to completemusicupdate.com/podcast, you will find them.
Yeah, I'd throw a .com in there somewhere, but you know, work out your own URL.
Just, I don't know, Google it. And finally, on to the actual reason we came here this week. It is the greatest story of 2017, possibly of all time. The great story of 2016 turned out to be a lie.
Yeah, we've not actually admitted that on the podcast. We did admit it in the CMU Daily. What was the greatest story of 2016? And not just in music, I mean just across the board.
That Ed Sheeran was stabbed in the face by royalty during a mock knighting of James Blunt.
So obviously that was the standout pop news story of 2016. But in a recent interview, James Blunt has said that that was a complete and utter fabrication.
I mean, it seems Ed Sheeran was stabbed in the face with a sword and James Blunt was there. So, it's not entirely a fabrication, but I guess every lie has some basis in truth.
And it...
Or a good lie.
...remained unclear. Clearly, Ed Sheeran has a scar.
Yes.
And James Blunt is saying that a sword was involved in creating that scar.
Or Ed Sheeran said there was a sword involved. James Blunt, who said the whole thing was a lie.
We don't clearly know what happened there, but seemingly the Princess Beatrice going to knight James Blunt and then accidentally stabbing Ed Sheeran in the face, which it sort of tells you what 2016 was like, that was the light relief of 2016. Anyway, it was completely untrue.
No, it seems actually what happened was Ed Sheeran dropped a sword in his face.
Which is almost quite amusing in itself.
Yeah. And I should have just gone with that one.
Don't quite see how that could happen. But anyway...
Anyway, my point is...
This story is
I
true.
I have stated that this is the greatest story of 2017. And this one has legal documents to back up its legitimacy.
It does.
Which is something I'm going to call for in the future for any story I find amusing.
And if anybody dares to claim that this one is a fabrication, we will go to the US Trademark Registry and we will pull out every last piece of paperwork to prove that this dispute is happening. So tell us about Deadmau5 and his cat and this fantastic piece of trademark litigation.
Deadmau5 is being sued because of the name of his cat. That's the story. He's got this cat called Professor Meowingtons.
Yes, of course. And it has to be said, this isn't just a pet cat, because this cat has its own Instagram account.
Yes.
So this cat in itself is a celebrity.
So it's a cat that's built its own following.
Yes. Well, I think it's a subset of Deadmau5's following who are sufficiently fans of Deadmau5 that they're also subscribed to his cat's Instagram feed.
And Deadmau5 has built the cat has not built its own following. That is that bit I've made up.
Yeah, you're over that. That's the fabrication.
I think the cat is probably unaware of its following, but it does have one. That's the important thing.
Professor Meowington. Actually, is it not Meowingtons?
Yes.
There's a s at the end. This is Deadmau5's cat. I think the story goes, I have to admit that there is actually more backstory to this than our report covered, and I'm still trying to draw a timeline of exactly what happened when and what paperwork was filed when.
I have all that because I looked it up.
You have it all? Mm. Well, that'll be interesting. But as I understand it, Deadmau5... Well, the word... I can't remember where I got this story from originally, but the word they used was that he adopted this cat. But that's just getting a cat, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's the word that everyone in the history the history of time has used for getting a cat.
When you buy a cat, you adopt it.
You don't buy a cat, you adopt a cat. Buying a cat sounds callous.
So he got this cat somehow in 2011,
yeah,
I believe. I don't quite know when the Instagram account was launched. But anyway, the cat has been in the picture for a few years now. And the dispute comes because there is a company that sells cat stuff on the internet that is also called Meowingtons.com. And that launched in 2014.
It was registered with a company in 2014. There's some confusion over when it was actually founded, because on Facebook it claims to have been founded in 2010.
Ooh.
But it was registered as a company in 2014, and later that year put in an application to register the trademark Meowingtons, which was granted in early 2015. 6 months after that, Deadmau5 tried to register the trademark Professor Meowingtons, which was refused because of its likelihood of confusion with Meowingtons, the company which already held this trademark. And since then, there's been a bit of a hoo-ha. That's the legal term.
Yes, there has been a trademark.
Because Deadmau5
hoo-ha.
Is not happy about
being denied
his trademark.
So, as I say, that's the backstory, which we didn't actually explain in our report. In it, the fact that Meowingtons, the company, has been granted the trademark in Meowingtons. Then we did know that Deadmau5 had been unsuccessful in his attempt to register the trademark because of the clash. But I suppose Deadmau5's argument is, unless you go by this Facebook page you found that claims that Meowingtons, the company, has been going since 2010, but certainly all of the official paperwork seems to suggest that the company originated in 2014.
Yes.
And so therefore, what Deadmau5, the producer, is basically saying is, well, I've had my cat since 2011. My cat has been a celebrity for quite a few years now. So therefore, although the company may have got its trademark application in first, we've been using the name in the public space much longer than the company. And then there is the allegation that the entrepreneur who set up this firm was a Deadmau5 fan, and therefore the allegation was clearly knew about the cat before she set up her company. Because we all knew about Deadmau5's...
We all knew about Deadmau5's cat.
Both celebrity... And let's remember, it's Professor Meowingtons. And if you go to his Instagram address...
It's Meowingtons PhD.
So he's got a PhD as well as a professorship. So it's a very academic as well as a celebrity cat.
He's contesting, he's retroactively contesting the Meowingtons trademark. So this trademark is now being considered for cancellation by the US trademark authorities, which is how it's become so contentious. And as you say, Deadmau5 has claimed that the woman who set up Meowingtons is a big, big fan of his and is well aware of his cat, and so she just stole the name. Her lawyer put out a statement this week saying...
Well, I suppose, crucially, she's now suing him, which is why it's now in the news. This has been brewing for ages, but the reason why it's suddenly become newsworthy is because he's now trying to get her trademark taken away, and he is saying, oh, she ripped me off, she knew. She's now suing him, accusing him of trademark infringement, but also interfering in her business or whatever the technical jargon is.
Well, she says that he's harming her business
That's
and reputation.
It.
By making these claims about her and her company.
So you said about her spokesperson who gave out quite a... neither side of this are trying to be overly polite in their statements. But the spokesman for Meowingtons.com said...
We haven't said her name yet, I don't think, but the entrepreneur who set up Meowingtons.com is Emma Basiri. Her lawyer put out a statement this week saying Ms. Basiri is not currently and has never been a fan or ever met Mr. Zimmerman, that being...
His real name.
His real name.
Joel.
Joel Zimmerman. She also adds, the act of naming your pet animal is not protected by the trademark laws of any country of which I am aware. The mouse is clearly the copycat in this case, and our legal team is confident that Ms. Baziri, a creative and hardworking entrepreneur who has built a successful online retail business, Meowingtons.com, inspired by her love of cats, will prevail as the rightful and sole owner of the mark Meowingtons.
So the mouse is the copycat here. I mean, let's just dwell.
What a line.
Although they did spell mouse like in the usual way.
Like mouse.
Not MAU5, so not quite on brand there. But regular readers of the CMU Daily will know this is not the first time Deadmau5 has had a run-in with other people over trademark issues or his logo or his name. And he and his lawyer always put out good statements in their response. And we've had, well, I say we.
We got statements from both of them.
I think the Hollywood Reporter reached out to both Deadmau5 and his lawyer, and they are both keen to fight back on this. They both basically said, this dispute's been rumbling on for a while. We desperately tried to find an amicable settlement, but the other side, they just won't play ball, and now we're going to have to fight this silly lawsuit. But we're going to win!
Yes, so Dina Lapolte, our favourite entertainment lawyer, who acts on behalf of Deadmau5, said, Deadmau5 has been extremely generous and attempted to resolve this matter amicably. However, as demonstrated by their legal action, they have no intention to address and remedy their intentional infringement and now attempt to extort and deprive our client of his rights, and we will take all available measures to protect and enforce his rights. Now, Deadmau5 said roughly the same thing, but slightly more succinctly.
And slightly more acrimoniously.
He said, from the very beginning, I was working to find a way to resolve this situation amicably. Now I am forced to litigate this woman out of existence. Bye-bye, Emma Baziri. I am going to protect the trademark I have been using since 2011.
Yeah, when he got the cat. When he adopted the cat.
Perhaps anyone who's wondering, that is an accurate impression of Deadmau5.
It very good. I enjoyed
exactly
it.
What he sounds like.
I enjoyed it very much. So perhaps it was 2011 when he got the cat, or perhaps it was 2011 when he set up the Instagram account. I mean, your timeline's good, but there's still a few missing bits of information in this story. And we guarantee you to dedicate all CMU resources for the next month to this story and this story alone, because it is the most magnificent dispute. Let's just remind ourselves, we are against time, we've got to wrap up, but let's just remind ourselves that we spent the last 10 minutes of this podcast talking about a piece of trademark litigation over the name of Deadmau5's cat. So I think we should just remember that. And I'm sure we'll come back to this story in a future podcast.
I hope we do.
I look, they better not settle. Imagine if it's got to court. It won't get to court. But imagine if it's got to court.
I would. There's no way it's going to get to court.
I would fly over to America to cover it in person. Although following this week's podcast, they probably wouldn't let me in. Hey ho.
Oh, well, I don't think anything else can top that. So let's just wrap this podcast up.
Yeah, let's
now
go back to Royal London House and have a terrible coffee.
Yes, and if Royal London House are welcome to sponsor us. But anyone else who wants that sort of treatment on the podcast, send your checks in. We should probably answer a question from a listener soon. I think it's about time we did that. Maybe we'll do that next week.
I sort of forgot that was part of the format. Yeah, send us
some
questions.
We were off for a while. If you've got a question, send it in. cmupodcast@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Anything music industry related, we'll see if we can answer it for you.
Also happy to review any of the items on the Royal London House menu, providing it only includes the free vegetables I eat.
Yes. Anyway, that's... This is quite enough of that.
It is. We've got to get out of here. There's something else happening in this studio.
Yes.
So go on. Presented by Andy Malt, Chris Cook.
Produced by Matt Beattie. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdates.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.